As usual, we are all gathered here today to listen to another exposition of the Lord Buddha's teaching. Before we commence, let us all take a moment to remind ourselves of how extremely fortunate we are to be his disciples, to be his students, to be followers of the path that he taught with infinite compassion, reminding ourselves that this is the only path that exists for true liberation, true freedom, true emancipation. There is no other path. We have embarked on the only path that exists for true happiness. Let us be grateful for that, and let us take a solemn vow to remain lifelong students of the great master, the great teacher. He is the most magnificent one, the unparalleled one, the infinitely virtuous one, the infinitely compassionate one, the most sublime one, the unequaled one, the awakened one, the Supreme Buddha. Let us take a moment to recite the stanzas that were once uttered by one of his disciples, who very proudly and with conviction claimed to be the disciple of the Buddha. As we are today just like him, let us take a moment to recite these stanzas, and as we do so, remind ourselves of the great virtues of our great master, and remind ourselves how incredibly fortunate we are to be his students. So let us all be upstanding to recite these stanzas, following which we will seek refuge in the Noble Triple Gem, observe the precepts, and continue with today's proceedings. Dhirasya vigata mohasya abhinna kilasya vijita vijayasya anighasya susamachittasya buddha silasya sadhupanyasya vesantarasya vimalasya bhagavato tasya savako hamasmi akatankatissa tusitasya vantalokamisasya muditasya khatasamanasya manujasya antimasarirasya narasya anopamasya virajasya bhagavato tasya savako hamasmi asansayasya kulasya venaikasya sarativarasya anuttarasya ruchiradhammasya nikhankasya abhasakarasya manachidasya virasya bhagavato tasya savako hamasmi nisabhasya appamiyasya gambhirasya monapattasya Khemankarasa Vedasa Dhammattasa Sanguttatasa Sangatigasa Muttasa Bhagavatotasa Savakohamasmi Nagasa Pantasenasa Kina Sanyojanasa Muttasa Patimantakasa Dhonasa Pannadhajasa Vitaragasa Dantasa Nippapanchasa Bhagavatotasa Savakohamasmi Nagasa Pantasenasa Kina Sanyojanasa Muttasa Patimantakasa Dhonasa Pannadhajasa Vitaragasa Dantasa Nippapanchasa Bhagavatotasa Savakohamasmi Namo tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa Namo tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa Namo tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa And now to observe the precepts and seek refuge in the Noble Triple Gem. Please repeat all together and after me. Buddham saranam gacchami. Dhammam saranam gacchami. Sangham saranam gacchami. Dutiyampi buddham saranam gacchami. Dutiyampi dhammam saranam gacchami. Dutiyampi sangham saranam gacchami. Tatiyampi buddham saranam gacchami. Tatiyampi dhammam saranam gacchami. Tatiyampi sangham saranam gacchami. Saranagamanam sampunnam. Panatipata veramani sikkhapadam samadhiyami. Adinnadana veramani sikkhapadam samadhiyami. Kamesu micchachara veramani sikkhapadam samadhiyami. Musavada veramani sikkhapadam samadhiyami. Surameraya majjapama dattana veramani sikkhapadam samadhiyami. Tisaranena saddhin panchasilam dhammam sadukam surakkitam katva appamadena sampadeta. Okay, you may all now be seated. Excuse me. And also before we commence then, let us take a moment to invite all celestial beings within earshot of this sermon, anyone and everyone who may wish to join us and witness the meritorious deed as it unfolds, as well as those who are eager to listen to the teaching of the Buddha, to achieve their liberation, as well as to help others do the same. Let us remind ourselves that we do this as we have a duty and obligation towards all those who have helped and supported us and assisted us, who have been by our side in the most difficult and testing of times, to guide us, to support us, to assist us, to show us the path. These are our parents, our siblings, our children, our teachers, our best of friends. Also will be among them those who we may have wronged, insulted, desecrated, offended, and hurt. Today it may be that they seek revenge for our mistreatments towards them. Although we have done such deeds in the past, today we realize the errors of our ways, and today we recognize that it is our duty to repay the debts that we owe them. And although once we may have been evil friends to them or enemies to them, it is today the opportunity that we have presented to ourselves to be Kalyanamittas, noble friends to them. So let us take this opportunity then to extend this invitation out to all of them. Extend this opportunity to all of them to join us and to listen to this sermon, to witness this meritorious deed and acquire merits. May such merits help them to redeem themselves and be born in the blissful plane. And may they be able to listen to the teaching of the Buddha, understand his teaching and comprehend it, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. So with deep compassion, emanating from the bottom of your hearts, and with a sense of duty and obligation, out to all of them, as I now make this invitation, I would like you to extend that invite out to all those sentient beings, devas, brahmas, spirits, demons, and those who will have preceded us. Invite them to join us and witness this meritorious deed and rejoice in these merits. Invite them to listen to the teaching of the Buddha and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Samanta chakravalesu atra gacchantu devata saddhammam munirajasa sunanto sagmokkhadam. Dhamma savana kalo ayam bhadanta. Dhamma savana kalo ayam bhadanta. Dhamma savana kalo ayam bhadanta. Excuse me. Let us also take a moment then to remind ourselves that although we are kind-hearted, generous, disciplined, and virtuous people today, and this is thanks to the noble associations that we are able to enjoy today, in this long journey that we have come through in samsara, we have seldom had this opportunity. Virtually always our associations have been with ignoble, immoral ones, whose associations defiled our minds with desire, aversion and delusion, and having been blinded with ignorance and attachment, countless times to have it our way, to relieve ourselves of the vexations, we will have offended, reviled, desecrated and insulted the noble ones. including the Noble Triple Gem, as well as the Buddha's ministry, the Sambuddha Shasana. The consequences of insulting something so pure, something so sublime, something so sacred, is that as we are about to embark on such a journey to achieve similar states for ourselves, what we did then come to haunt us now, come to hinder our path now. The very things that we offended are the things that it becomes incredibly difficult for us to achieve today. So, today we understand the errors of our ways, and therefore let us take a moment to seek forgiveness for all words, thoughts, and actions of revile, desecration, insult or slander, and offense we might have directed towards the Noble Ones, the Samma Sambuddhas, Paccheka Buddhas, and Arahatta Buddhas, the Anagamis, Sakrudagamis, Sotapannas, be they on the path of having attained the fruits, all the Noble Ones, as well as the Buddha's ministry, the Sambuddha Shasana. Let us take a moment to seek their forgiveness. And as you do this, I urge you to remind yourself, to promise yourself, to take a solemn oath, to never find yourself conducting your speech, thoughts, or actions in this manner ever again. And finally, let us all make a firm resolve. May all of the merits that we have conducted and committed throughout our long journey in samsara, which are yet to be spent, may they come towards us, may they come to our rescue, may they be the blessing that we need today. To be able to listen to this sermon uninterrupted, to be able to understand and comprehend it. And may during the course of this sermon, we be able to achieve the noble state of Sotapanna, free ourselves from the four great hells once and for all, and embark on the path to becoming a son, a daughter of the great master, the great Buddha. For those among you who have already achieved that noble state, may this be the sermon during which you be able to fulfill the subsequent stages and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. With that resolve in mind, I invite you all to prepare yourselves now to listen to this sermon. Okay. More and more, you embrace the Dhamma. The more and more, you allow the Dhamma to flow through your ears into your system, through your vessels, into your blood, and to completely take you over. the more you should feel empowered. Thoughts of destitution, helplessness, these are thoughts that must start to disappear one by one from your mind. It would not be right to call ourselves destitute anymore. If we have come across the Buddha, and to come across the Buddha is to come across his teaching, if we have sought refuge in his sublime teaching, then one who has sought refuge can no longer say that they are destitute. After all, that is what taking refuge means. One who is lost, one who is in despair, one who is helpless, one who doesn't know where to go, where to turn, who to ask for help. This is someone who is lost, who is helpless, who is destitute, who is desolate. But once they have found refuge, they become a refugee. So once you have found refuge, then thoughts and feelings of destitution and helplessness, they must all start to rescind. And in their place, you will begin to feel thoughts of empowerment. The feeling that you can do this. The feeling of you now know what to do. You now know where to go. You now know who or where to turn. You now know that this is possible. You were destitute when you did not know, when you did not realize, when you saw no light at the end of the tunnel. But after you've seen that light, however bleak it may be, after you've seen that light, you are awakened with a sense of confidence, with a sense of accomplishment, with a sense of fulfillment, with a sense of, yes, I can do this. I feel empowered. I'm no longer helpless. There is a path. There is a way. This can be done. I have a teacher. I know my place. I know how to go. I know how to end. Ask yourself if you have these thoughts now. Ask yourself if those thoughts of destitution have now been replaced with thoughts of empowerment. Do you feel confident? This is not a sense of overconfidence. This is not a sense of, I don't need anyone. I can do this on my own. It is not that. Until you have crossed the river, do not forget you need the raft. It is one who is on this side of the river, who wants to get to the other side, and yet can see no way of achieving that. This is someone who is destitute, who is helpless. But if all of a sudden he thinks to himself, well, I can't see any way of getting to the other side. There is no raft. There is no boat. There is no vessel that can carry me to the other side. But still, I think I can do this nevertheless. And he just blindly steps foot into the water. Then only death can come to him. Only destruction can come to him. That is foolishness. That is a sense of overconfidence, a sense of arrogance, a sense of I don't need help, I can do this on my own. Don't forget, only Buddhas are entitled to that sort of confidence. Either Supreme Buddhas or Silent Buddhas. To become an Arahat Buddha, you need help. You need help until the last moment. Even that last step, you need refuge. It is only at the last moment, it is only once you have maneuvered that last step and you are free of all cankers, all things that kept you bound to samsara, can you truly say, mission accomplished. That is when you go in front of the Buddha and claim to become his son, that you have become his son, that you no longer need anyone's help, that you no longer have anything left to do, that everything is accomplished. One day you will be able to utter that paean, kina jati, usitam brahmachariyam, katam karaniyam, na parang ittattayati pajanati. I have made extinct all becoming, all jati. I will no longer become anything. I have brought to extinction all of suffering. Everything is done. Everything that I had to do, all of that is done. Mission accomplished. There is nothing left to do. In other words, I have crossed the river. I no longer need an oar or a raft or a boat. Now I'm free. So until such time, even the last thought before one becomes an Arahant, they still need refuge in the Noble Triple Gem. One must not forget this. So that is what I meant by, you must not be overconfident. But rather, once you come across the Dhamma, that is akin to a passenger who wants to get to the other side, or a man who wants to get to the other side of the river, has been looking for something, a way, a device, a method, a means to get to the other side, and all of a sudden he spots a raft. And now there is a way to get to the other side. And the boatsman is happy to help. Or at least, he can do it himself. There's an oar, and there's a raft, and now you can get to the other side. So now you feel confidence. It's that sort of confidence I'm talking about. You do understand the difference, don't you? The confidence of, I have a problem, I can solve it, because I know how now. I now know how. I now have a method. That confidence versus, I have a problem. I can solve it. I don't need anyone's help. I'm just gonna give it a go, see what happens. That is the wrong kind of confidence. Because to solve any problem, you need to have a method. You need to have a means. You need to have a way. And that is the refuge that we seek, folks. The Noble Triple Gem is that refuge. That is why we always remind ourselves that the Noble Triple Gem is our only refuge. Buddha is our only refuge. Dhamma is our only refuge. Sangha is our only refuge. Now, they have all sorts of meanings at all sorts of levels. We have discussed this in the past. You can think of the Buddha as the Buddha, as in the Buddha the person, the Buddha who lived 2,500 years ago, who was once a prince, once a bodhisattva, attained Buddhahood under the Bodhi tree, and then spent 45 years expounding the teaching to all sentient beings with infinite compassion towards their liberation. So there is that Buddha. And yes, that is the Buddha. You can seek refuge in him. And then there is the Dhamma that he expounded. Again, you can seek refuge in the Dhamma. Then there is the Sangha that you can seek refuge in. These are the bhikkhus and the bhikkhunis, upasikas and upasikas. Who have since the Buddha, since the advent of the Buddha, taken up his teaching, they have borne his teaching, and they have disseminated his teaching. While helping themselves, they help others to journey this path. So that is that Sangha. And that is on one level, the Buddha, Dhamma and the Sangha. And yes, we do seek refuge in them. But if you go deeper, you will find that they have more profound meanings. Ultimately, when you examine it with a, you need to take a closer look, you will realize that all these three things are really talking about Nibbana. One day we'll talk about that. They're all referring to Nibbana. Because really, there is no refuge for anyone other than Nibbana. Just think about the Buddha himself. What was his refuge? His refuge was Nibbana. He used the Dhamma to get to Nibbana because that is where he wanted to go. What good is the Dhamma if it does not get you to Nibbana? So the Dhamma is a means to get ourselves to Nibbana. We'll talk about this. But what I want you to feel, folks, is, I hope you feel this, if you have truly sought refuge in the Noble Triple Gem, and they are not just words. You know, at the start of a sermon, it is customary now for us, is it not, in any sermon, to seek refuge in the Noble Triple Gem. And with great respect, we do this, upstanding most of the time. And we utter Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi, Dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi, Sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. And not just once, but twice and then thrice. We seek refuge in the Noble Triple Gem. And I ask you the question, after you have said all these lines, right, nine of them altogether, 3 times 3, Buddhaṃ, Dhammaṃ, Sanghaṃ, and the first time, and then Dutiyampi and Tatiyampi. So, 3 times 3, 9. Do you feel you have really found refuge? Or is it just something that you have to say because the monk asks you to repeat that at the start of a sermon? And it's just one of those things you have to do before you get to listen to the sermon. And you do it because everyone else does, otherwise you're just going to look weird. But not really understood why it is that we do this. What is the meaning? What is there to achieve? Do you really feel that you have found refuge? Do you really feel that the Noble Triple Gem have come to your rescue? Do you? Do you feel empowered? As empowered as a man who's been waiting on this side of the bank to get to the other side, on the bank of the river, to get to the other side. Someone who's been waiting for a very long time, wondering how if ever am I going to get to the other side. I've tried everything, and the waters are dangerous. It's too deep and full of unknowns. I can't venture this on my own. I need refuge, because I don't know how, I don't know when, I don't know if, I don't know any of these things. Will I? Can I? Should I? How do I? When do I? What if? All these questions. Think of refugees in times of turmoil, like in the times of a waging war, or in times of a famine. Think of people, right? Destitute people. Right? There's a famine and a serious drought everywhere. There's no food to be found, but you want to live nonetheless. Who doesn't? And there's no food. There's no water. Now imagine yourself in that situation. Now you need help. You need someone to come and help you, because you can't seem to be able to find a way out of this. You can't cultivate crop. There is no water. You don't have the tools. You just can't work out a method to survive. Several days have passed without any food. You're starving. Now what do you need? Before you say what you need, who are you now? Now you're someone destitute, aren't you? Imagine you also have a family. Your spouse, your children. They also need help. They're also hungry and starving, and they're crying for help. You're so hungry, you're starting to digest yourself from the inside. You're so hungry, you feel that you have to, if you don't find something to eat soon enough, you're going to have to eat either parts of yourself or feed parts of your body to your children. Or worse, the other way around. Now imagine yourself in that situation. Now you're destitute. There's not a drop of water to be seen anywhere. There's no food whatsoever, not even a blade of grass. Nothing. How would you feel? You've been on the run, you've been trying to find something to eat for several days now. And all of that has just been a waste of time. You can feel the pain. You are exhausted. Don't you need help? As you imagine this, what sort of thoughts flow through your mind? Are there thoughts like, ooh, I'd hate to be in a place like that, Swami Nansa. I'd hate to be like that. I've seen things like that in films. I myself have not been in a situation like that. But I'd hate to be in a situation like that. Sure? Think again. You've only seen that in films? You've never been in a place like that? You've never been in a situation like that? Destitute? Never been like that? It's situations where you know you have to do something to retain your sanity, but you also know that no amount of doing that is going to help you at all. You've got to, but there's no point in doing it. It's like if you're, you know, when you're in the middle of the desert, you got to keep on the move, just in case you find something, just something, maybe an oasis somewhere, because you know one thing, there is no oasis where you are right now, so you have to keep moving. But you've kept on doing this for days on end, and you've not come across anything, not even a drop of water. So what is your mental state right now? Imagine this situation. How do you feel? In the middle of the desert. Can you stop moving? Can you? No, you can't. Why not? Because hope keeps telling you, keep going. Keep going and you'll find it. And it's not just hope, but your whole body is burning because you haven't had a drop of water for many days. Your body is starting to digest itself. Your stomach is starting to digest itself. That's how hungry you are, because you haven't had a decent meal. You haven't had anything to eat for many days. Your children are crying on the one side. One of them has fainted. You have to carry them on your back. And you have to carry not just your weight on your two legs, but also your child's weight. You also have to support someone else. Hold them by their hand, otherwise they're going to give up. The only source of courage that you have right now is one, that's burning sensation that comes from the inside, the feeling, the physical pain of your body trying to digest itself, which you can't stop either. You've tried vomiting the acids that are in your stomach, but they just keep on filling again. And every time you try to throw that stuff out, it burns all the way out. But every time you empty your stomach of the acids, they're right back there, because your body is now hungry. It'll eat itself if it must. I want you to imagine this situation. I want you to imagine what destitution is like. This feeling of helplessness. Yes, for now you can imagine this is an imaginary situation. Never been in a place like that. It's fine. For now, it's okay. I want you to focus on this feeling of there's no point in doing it, but this, I can't not do it either. And you have to keep on moving. You have to keep on moving because, as I said, one, you're burning from the inside, and two, you see your children. You don't want the worst to come to them. So there's the physical pain of what it's doing to yourself, and there's the mental torture of what's happening to your loved ones. So you have to keep on moving, even if you have to drag everyone else. There's not a drop of water in sight. Not a blade of grass in sight. Not even a beast that you could devour. Nothing. Just arid, barren, tasteless land, void of any source of sustenance. Now picture yourself there. Imagine yourself in that situation. The burning heat of the sun. You have stopped perspiring because there's no more water to perspire in your body. So now there's no way for the heat to escape. You're just heating up on the inside. With every step you take, you're losing hope. Because every step is more difficult than the last one. Remember, you're dragging everyone behind you. If you give up now, everyone else will have no hope. You have to keep dragging them along with you. You can also see some vultures soaring over the sky above. You know what they're waiting for. Every time you take a look up, they seem to have descended some distance, as if they know meal time is getting closer. Started off with one or two, but now there's a flock of them. And they seem to be right above your head, circling round, salivating. They just can't wait for it. They know they're going to get something tasty. What are you going to throw at them? Chase them? You can't expend any more energy. You have to conserve every tiny ounce of energy because you can't chase them away. Even that is going to consume energy. Again, you feel destitute, don't you? Any good mother, any good father would chase those vultures away, those predators. You know what they're for? They're here for you, they're here for your children. Perhaps children first, because they're more tender. Rumor among them is the tender meat is so tasty. They seem to be drawn more towards the younger ones. But you have to conserve your energy. You can't chase them away. Any good mother would, though. Any good father would, though. Wouldn't they? One of your children look up at you and say, "Mummy, please don't let them get to me. I'm scared." Now what are you going to do? How do you like the feeling of you got to do it, but you can't do it? Or that you got to do it, but there's no point in doing it? You got to chase them away. It's what your little one's asking of you. "Please don't let them at me. I'm scared, Mummy. Help me." You'll protect me, won't you? I want you to imagine this situation, folks. Picture yourself there. That feeling of destitution. And right now you're feeling, yes, oh, I've seen them in films. Yeah, okay. But I've never been there. We'll see about that. Oh, I'd hate for something like that to happen to me. I wouldn't wish it on my worst enemy. Did you know there's nothing to wish? And you know what else those vultures attract? Because when there are vultures in any given area, then someone else gets news. There's a meal ahead. What's that noise you hear? You look around you, and it's a pack of hyenas. You can hear their growls, their pointy teeth. They can't control themselves. They seem to be so excited. Even in this dry desert, with not a drop of water, their mouths are full of it. Oh, but wait, that's not water. That's them salivating. There's a pack of them. There's enough of them. And there's enough of you. One's got its sight on your little ones. Because he knows this is the most juicy. Here's the juicy one. The tender one. It's the soft meat. That's where it's going to come from. That little young one. They seem to be quarreling among themselves. What is that about? Looks like they've got an argument among themselves. They're fighting over who's going to get whom. So in their minds, they already know that they're going to get a meal. They just can't work out who's going to be whose meal. That seems to be the only question that remains in their mind right now. It's not a case of if, it's a case of when for them now. How does that make you feel? The feeling that they have no doubt that food is going to be served in a few moments. And how does that make you feel when you know they're thinking about you? Vultures above you, hyenas all around you, not a drop of water in sight. And the threats are not only coming from the outside. All this while, you are trying to digest yourself from the inside. The acid is burning you from the inside. It's starting to burn your guts. You are starting to taste your own flesh. As the acid in your stomach refluxes and it reaches your throat, you are beginning to taste something you never tasted before in your entire life. What might that be? Is that the taste of your own flesh? Now you know what the hyenas are waiting for. I want you to imagine this situation and I want you to ask yourself, how do you feel right now? Haven't your palms started to sweat yet? Are you in the moment? So now, can you stop? Can you stop moving? There's vultures above you, hyenas around you, you're burning from the inside, and every step you take, it's taking up whatever energy you have left within you. And you also know that for you to keep moving forward, dragging all the rest of your family with you, you need more energy, and that energy has to come from somewhere. So it's no wonder that your stomach, your guts are trying to digest itself. The only way you could stop that, or at least reduce that, is if you stopped moving right now to conserve energy. But can you do that? How could you do that? Look at your little one's face. Look at his arms. Look at his legs. Look at his little body. Because you won't see it in the same state for much longer. Right now, you are the only thing that's between you, that's between your child, and a hearty meal for the hyenas. You're the only thing that's between you, your family, your children, and a feast for the vultures. How do you feel right now? Do you understand the feeling of destitution? You're having a mental breakdown now. Your heart is pounding with fear and terror. As the jackals encroach, the hyenas encroach. fear is getting the better of you. There's no point in shouting. No one's going to hear you. And besides, even if you try to get someone's attention, you're only consuming even more energy. And the more energy you draw from your body, the more energy your body has to draw from digesting itself. How do you get out of this situation? Do you understand destitution? It's burning from above and it's burning below your feet. You're burning from either end. And you're burning in between. Your head's burning, your shoulders burning, your feet burning, your stomach burning, your heart burning. You're burning inside out. You are a walking ball of fire. Only kept alive because of destitution and hope. But you're beginning to realize that this hope is really hopeless. The kids want to give up. Mommy, I can't move anymore. I'm tired, Mommy. Mommy, you carry on. Can I stop, please? Can you? Can you even do that? You're a mother. How could you do that? You carry on, Daddy. I can't move any longer. I'm too tired. I'm sleepy. I'm so hot. I need water. Daddy, you said you promised to look after me. You promised to keep me happy. The day I came into this world, you carried me in your arms and you promised me you'd keep me happy. You promised to feed me. You promised to keep me free from pain. But look at what's happening to me, Daddy. Help me. You want to cry, but you can't risk it. There's not a snowball's chance in hell that even if you tried to cry, any tears would drop from your eyes because you're too dry for that. But even if it did, you can't risk it because that bit of water you need on the inside, not on the outside, to keep you alive. Just when you feel your eyes are tearing up, you gotta hold it back. That is precious water. If only but one teardrop comes into your eye, that is going to be the only drop of water for many miles from where you are. So that has to be on the inside, not on the outside. Do you know what it feels like to be destitute? The vultures are descending with every passing minute, and they seem to be growing in numbers. The party's on. The invites have been sent. and it's happening. It seems they've been hungry for some time. The gluttonous hyenas, they just can't seem to wait any longer. Their mouths are dry just from salivating. They're getting itchy. They're getting irritable. Doesn't seem like they want to wait much longer. You're testing their patience. These are beasts designed to hunt, designed to kill, designed to feast. Do you understand the institution? You haven't stopped. You're still moving. How can you stop? Your entire body wants to stop, but can you? Can you accept that you have given up? Look at what you've got to lose. Everything precious, everything that you've lived your life for, everything you struggled so hard for, everything you love, everything you care for, everything you doted on. Can you stop? The thought does pass your mind from time to time, but you curse yourself. Don't you ever. I will never. And you keep that next step. You don't know which is louder. Is it the thumping of your heart or your footsteps hitting the dry, barren soil beneath you? Now you're getting delirious. You've forgotten which way is left, which way is right, which way is forward or backward. You're beginning to lose it. The vultures seem to have landed quietly. One seems to be trotting up. Dear little one, and the hyenas are jealous. How come they get the first part? We got to get there first. They think to themselves. Now you have vultures to chase on one hand, and hyenas to chase on the other. But what are you going to chase them with? Do you have anything to throw at them? The only thing you have to throw at them is the thing you're holding in your hand. That is your kid. That is all you have. How can you throw at them those, the very thing you're trying to protect from them? Now it seems to be that the only question that remains is who goes first. Is it you? Is it your kid? Which one? The elder one? Or the younger one? Or is it your spouse? Do you understand destitution? Imagine yourself right in that situation and tell me, how do you feel right now? What are some of the words you'd use to describe how you feel right now? I'll give you the first part, you give me the second part. Hope. Exactly. Help. Yeah, that's right. Easy for you, you just have to keep saying the same thing. Less. I'm making it easy on you. I say hope. You say less. I say help. You say less. That is the feeling of destitution. But have you stopped? That's the wrong question to ask, isn't it? Can you stop? That's more like it. So can you stop? The thought does cross your mind from time to time, but you curse yourself. Your body feels heavier with every step you take forward. You move forward. It feels a ton heavier than when it did in the last step. Every step you take feels like your weight keeps going up by a ton. Why is that? Your body gets weaker. The energy is draining. Your hope is fading. Do you understand destitution? You hear a scream. You've lost your bearings. You can't even tell where those sounds are coming from anymore. But you look around. Because you know it can only mean something. It can only mean something bad, something terrible. A vulture's just landed on your kid's shoulder. And it's pecking at its flesh. It seems to be that it can't wait until the kid's dead. It's hungry. Now, what are you going to do? You can't do with it. You can't do without it. What are you going to do? Are you going to jump and chase the vulture away? Isn't that going to take up more energy? Energy that you need to keep moving forward with your kid? Energy that you need to keep dragging everyone else and yourself. So now you have to make a judgment. Is it this or is it that? It no longer feels like you're comparing good with bad. You're just going to have to settle on the worst of two evils. You're trying to work out which one's worse. Do I spend precious energy and try and chase this vulture away? and save my kid just for this moment, you know it's a pointless task. Oh, that's another one. Point. Yes, yes, point. Exactly. You know this is pointless. Because as you jump to your kid and chase that vulture away, you know there's another one right behind it. As if they're taking turns, waiting for their appointment. In an orderly fashion. They've lined themselves up. They've agreed on who takes which turn. They're very disciplined. There's plenty to go around for everyone. There's no need to fight. They know this. One's got its eyes on the kid. The other's got its eyes on the husband. The other's got its eyes on the wife. One's got its eyes on the legs. They're the most juicy bits, he thinks. There's one vulture whose favorite is the heart. So they're waiting for that. They're not interested in any other bits. One of the jackals, his favorite is apparently the brains. Doesn't want any other bit. He just wants the brains. He's made it known to the rest of his pack. You guys have the rest, but leave the brains for me. They've come to an agreement on that. How does it make you feel that they've come to that sort of agreement? Do you understand destitution? Do you? One of the hyenas is thirsty. He's bloodthirsty. He has a peckish. He likes blood. At one sitting, he can consume a couple of pints easy. Do you understand destitution? Let's try that little activity again. Help. Hope. Point. Meaning. Fruit. Essence. So how do you decide when this dilemma hits you in the face? You got to keep moving. You can't stop to chase, but you can't not stop to chase. You got to keep moving, but you can't keep moving. You got to chase the vultures away, but you can't chase the vultures away. You got to chase the hyenas away, but you can't chase the hyenas away. You got to get to some food, but you can't get to some food. You got to get to some water, but you can't get to any water. You got to rest, but you can't rest. You got to stop moving right now. But you can't stop moving right now. You got to take a break. But you can't take a break. You're about to break. And you will break. Do you understand destitution? Every minute seems like an hour. Because when threat is looming, when danger is hitting you from every side, you can't seem to find an opening. You can't seem to find a refuge. You can't seem to find a way out. Time seems to stop. Before there was only one vulture on your kid's shoulders. Now there are three of them pecking at him from every side. One dabs at him, dabs at his chest, gets a bit of meat. And flies away. The war has begun. They were all waiting for that first move. Now it's an open wound. The smell of blood starts to take over. Now the hyenas go into a frenzy. They love the smell of blood. Especially that one hyena who likes a bit of blood. Did I tell you he's got a peckish for that? Mealtime. The party has begun. What do you do now? Do you stop? To tend to your kid? Remember, the other one's on your back. You're going to have to put him down. Right now you're carrying him above your head and he's your shelter from the scorching sun. God knows he's probably dead already. But you don't like to believe that. You don't like to accept that. So you keep carrying him and moving forward. You keep on carrying him. You don't want to let him down. You just don't want to accept that he's a goner. But now, what do you do? Do you stop and go and tend to your kid? He's got an open wound. It's bleeding. He's no longer complete. He's missing a part of his chest. That must be the tender meat. You take off your top. But wait, can you? What's going to happen if you take it off? The sun's going to have a feast. That's been the only thin layer between the scorching heat of the sun and your skin. You take that top off, and you're going to be a walking barbecue. But wait, can you afford not to? Oh, but wait, can you afford to? Oh, but wait, can you afford not to? Oh, but wait, can you afford to? Do you understand destitution? How are you feeling right now? What are you about to do now? Taking off your top and bandage this open wound. Give me a word for it. A word that describes what you're about to do now. If you want, I can give you the first half. You give me the second half. No, shall we go with that? The sun's going to get you. And besides, that was just the first vulture. There's a whole pack of them. And everyone wants a piece of this. None of them arrived to go home hungry. Not when there's enough to go around for all of them. So, what are you going to do now? Take your top off and cover that wound so it stops bleeding, or at least what you can try to stop bleeding. But then as you stop and turn towards that kid, you realize you're turning your back on something else. Those beasts are getting hungrier. If you would just only stop struggling so much and just let them come and do what they want to do, that'd be so much easier. Wouldn't it? Those hyenas are so close. You can smell them. That musky scent that comes from those animals, those furry animals. Especially when they're hungry. The smell of their saliva as it mixes with the air. Especially when they see the color red. Now your kid's fainted. He can't keep himself awake. He's too weak for that. With an open wound. So what do you do now? Decide, come on. Do you stop? And if you do, you stop moving. You stop moving. And if you stop now, you've turned your back on imminent danger, this imminent threat, that is the hyenas. To tend to this kid, you're going to have to take your top off. That's the only place you can find something to bandage the wound with. It's the only bit of cloth you have. And if you do that, you're going to have to put down the kid that's on your head. Two problems with that. One, the moment you put it down, if it's alive, you might as well have laid down the table. And call those hungry animals for dinner. And two, what's even worse, is you might just realize that the kid is dead. Your mind does not want to accept that. for fear that you'll uncover the truth. You don't want to put him down, but you can't let that open wound just be like that. And it's shooting out blood. The only food for miles. What are you going to do now? How do you feel right now? You're damned if you do, and you're damned if you don't. That, my friends, is the feeling of destitution. Thank heavens these things only come in films, right? This doesn't happen in real life, does it? This is only an imaginary story, isn't it? Because it's not like you're burning from the top, you're burning from beneath, and you're burning from the middle. And you're burning inside out. It's not like it's like that, is it? It's not like you always got threats coming from above, threats coming from around, and threats coming from within, is it? Because it's not like you're in a desert, is it? And because it's not like you haven't eaten for days, or had a drop of water for days. Is it? Is it? No, because that man's in the desert. You're just in samsara, aren't you? Samsara's not like that, is it? Or is it? What about when you're vexed? When you want something and you know you can't have it. You can't not reach out and grab it. Because you're damned if you don't. But you know if you do reach out and grab it, you're going to have hell to answer to. So you're damned if you do. What if you're a mother, just like the mother in the story? What if you're a mother and you've got a pretty daughter? You know, the pretty ones, the especially pretty ones, just like your daughter. She's pretty, isn't she? She's the apple of your eye. When she was born, you held her in your arms, and you thought you'd given birth to a baby goddess. Remember that day? And you wanted to name her something fitting. They didn't agree with the name you wanted to give her. So you ended up calling her Angel. Remember? So, you and your daughter in Sansara. Where's this place called Sansara? Oh, let's just say you're walking home. It's sort of dusk time, 6:37. She's finished her classes. You're walking along with her. There's no one around. Surely she'd be safe. And then there's a pack of wolves. Or a pack of hyenas coming from the one side. You know they're hyenas because they start to howl. They keep moving closer, you keep moving faster. Home is still quite a distance from where you are. Oh yes, and your daughter, she's very beautiful. That's why you're a happy mother. You've got a beautiful daughter. She's as beautiful as they come. Not in the 7 adjacent villages do they have a girl who's as beautiful as your daughter. She's as beautiful as they come. In other words, she's as tasty as they come. Ask the hyenas, they'll tell you. She's yummy. She's delicious. Party's on. Just like those vultures, just like those hyenas, they're just waiting for a moment when you turn your back. What do you want to do? You want to chase those hyenas away. But you can't stop. One of the worst things to do is when you are prey to a predator, is look at the prey, look at the predator in its eyes. You've heard this before, haven't you? Because then they know that you know that they know. That's the problem. It's all right for them to know. It's all right for you to know. But the problem is when they know that you know that they know. So that's why you can't stop. You can't turn around and look at the pack of hyenas and tell them, get lost. Because then what happens? Then they know that you know that they know. Until then, it's just a game of pretense. It's a game of, I'm going to pretend that they don't know that I know that they know. But when you meet eye to eye, now they know that you know that they know. In their words, it's just an invitation to attack. So you can't stop. You can't stop to chase them away. They're hungry, they're salivating, and they're getting hungrier because the howls are getting louder. One of the hyenas say, "Anangi." Surely you've heard this before. In any other country, they'll say, "She's a looker." Or they might say, "Hello, sis." So what are you going to do now? You're the lucky mother. You're the lucky mother who gets to decide what to do now. So what are you going to do now? If you are struggling to imagine this situation, then go back to the desert situation. You understand destitution? Okay, now come back. And here's the other thing. Right? If you start to chase the hyenas away, it's going to make them angry. You know what's worse than a hungry hyena? An angry, hungry hyena. You don't want an angry, hungry hyena. So, your daughter's saying, "Mommy, what are those hyenas doing behind us? Can you, like, ask them to go? They've been behind us for, like, the last 10-15 minutes and they're howling. Don't know what they want. I don't like the look at them." And you're thinking to yourself, "Kid, yeah, I got sense of them way before you did." Because you're only struggling for your life. My concern is both mine and yours. So, mother, can you chase them? Can you tell them to go? Because, you know, the thing is, this kid is so naive. Hasn't been around for that long. Doesn't know how to deal with hyenas. So asking for mother to help, just like that kid asked his mother, "Mother, you're not going to let go of my hand, are you? You're going to look after me, aren't you? You're going to protect me, aren't you, mother? You're going to take me to safe ground, aren't you, mother? We're going to get to some water soon, aren't we, mother?" Look at his face and go, "Nope." If you can. Now look at your daughter's face and go, "What are you going to do? stop and get your umbrella out of your handbag and threaten the hyenas? And tell them, if you come any closer, I'm going to smack you with this. What's the worst you can do? You can chuck the umbrella at them. And then? What's worse than an angry, hungry hyena? An angry, hungry hyena with your umbrella. You've clenched your fists. Your fists are sweaty. Your daughter picks up that. And now she knows that you know that she knows that you're scared. All this time, the only hope she had was you. She thought you were brave, you were courageous, you could fight off any angry, hungry hyena. But now you're showing that you're scared. What are you going to do? Now you're feeling how? You're feeling how? Okay, let's try that exercise again. You can't shout, by the way. You can't shout because there's no one within earshot. No one's going to hear you. There's no one around. It's dark. You can't scream for help. And up ahead is a tunnel. Just when you thought it couldn't get worse. And that's that tunnel that's known to have a flickering bulb. It's that bulb you thought you should get fixed sometime. Never got round to it. You walked past that for many months and you thought one day you need to get this fixed. It's flickering and when it goes dark, it stays like that for a little while. And that's the tunnel you got to now walk through. And the hyenas, they're closer. They know that when both you and they are in the tunnel, then no one sees what happens in tunnels. That's their territory, that's their turf. So they're just waiting for you to walk into the trap. And they're salivating. They're hungry. You can't stare at them because that's going to make them angry. You don't want an angry, hungry hyena. So you pretend that you don't know that they don't know that you don't know. Or at least you pretend that they don't know that you don't know that they don't know. It's all a pretense. The truth is that they know that you know that they know. And besides, you know, they're not hunting for practice. They've done it before. On the same turf. On similar prey. They're renowned for it. They're infamous for it. So what's going to happen now? Because you can't... You're thinking of walking back? What, making a U-turn? Straight up ahead is the tunnel. Can you stop where you are? No. Can you keep moving forward? No. Can you turn around and walk back? No. Can you fly? No. Right, what are you going to do then? Do you understand destitution? But I thought these things come only in movies, the desert story. How do you describe how you feel right now? Let's try that again. Help. Hope. What do you want to do now? As in, keep walking. Because that's the only option left to do. Just keep walking under the tunnel. Okay, what would you say that is? Fruit? Meaning? Essence? Thank you. Mothers with beautiful daughters, I feel for you. Husbands with beautiful wives, I feel for you. Sons with beautiful mothers, I feel for you. I feel for you. And it's not just that way around, it can also be the other way around. Perhaps those things don't happen in dimly lit tunnels or dark tunnels. Rather, they happen behind closed doors, in the office, when everyone else is left for home. But your husband's been late over the last month, more often than not. Says he's got some work to tend to. He also has a secretary. It seems this work that they have to attend to, that they have to stay after work, after normal working hours, requires both him and his secretary to stay after work. No. Do you or don't you? What is the feeling that you have? Imagine yourself in that situation. What sort of feeling do you have? How does it make you feel? Desti? Yes. That is the feeling of destitution. You're damned if you do. Because what happens if you do? Right? You're a family. You got kids. You're a family, right? If you go digging this cesspit, you're going to find what you're going to find in the cesspit. You're going to find a big fat turd. And it stinks. And when it comes out of the laundry, then it's going to shred your family life to pieces. The kids are going to find out. The neighbors are going to find out. Everyone in the workplace is going to find out. Your parents are going to find out. Your siblings are going to find out. And everyone who warned you against getting into that relationship is going to find out. And then you're going to become the laughing stock. No? But it's all fine when he doesn't know that you don't know that he doesn't know. isn't it? It's all fine when you don't know, when he doesn't know, that you don't know. The truth is, though, that sometimes you know. But you hope that he knows. Or that he thinks, at least, that you don't know. How does this make people feel? Imagine yourself in this situation. I don't for a moment think that you find yourselves in these situations. But these are situations that people find themselves in. How does this make... You know, I'm asking you, do you understand what destitution is? That feeling of destitution, that feeling of help? Yes. Hope? Indeed. Point? That's the one. Meaning? That's right. Why? You're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. If you do, it's going to ruin everything. If you don't, it's going to ruin everything. If that mother were to stop and turn around and say something to those kids, sorry, I meant hyenas, and say something to those hyenas, then what's going to happen? Everything's going to go wrong. But if she doesn't, and continues, and they enter that dark tunnel, everything's going to go wrong. Now, you're damned if you do, and you're damned if you don't. Now what do you do? What about that feeling when you have to answer to your boss? You need your job. The boss needs you more than the job. Tell me these things don't happen. You need the job. The boss needs you more than he needs the job. The boss needs you more than he needs your job. So you're really to him, your job is not your job. Your job is his job. Now what do? Yes, I understand. In today's day and age, you know, you don't have to keep things quiet. You can call out and blow the whistle and tell everyone that such and such things are going on in the workplace. But let's see, both you and I come to this agreement that let's agree that, you know, this doesn't really happen. What we like to tell ourselves is one, but what the truth is a completely different picture. How about we agree on the truth? What do you do then? You have a mortgage to pay. You have a rental to pay. You have 3 mouths to feed. You have children who need to be sent to school, and you have tuition to pay. You have bills to pay. And above all, you have a name that you have to protect. You can't be known as the one who got, within air quotes, done at the office. That would be such a disgrace. Right? What if everyone found out? That you are soiled goods. What if your spouse found out? Sometimes if they did, perhaps they'd go mad. You know what the temperament is like. And they may walk in and tear the place up. Because he's a bit like that. When he gets angry, he dials a different number. Now what do? Do you speak up? Because right now you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't, right? If you do, you've got something to lose. If you don't, you've got something to lose. So what do? I'm asking you. I'm not telling you what you should do. That's not my job. I'm asking you, what do you do? I'm sure you know people who've been in similar situations. Let's be honest. I'm sure of that. You know people who've been in similar situations. Sometimes they would have confided in you and you alone. And the next day they hand in their resignation and they move on. They can't go back for a character certificate. How are they going to explain it to their children? I'm telling you, do you understand what it means to feel destitution? Do you understand that feeling? It is a sense of intense vexation. A situation when only two plausible answers remain, but both of them are equally bad. With either option, you got something to lose. So it seems there are no winners in this game, only losers. It just depends. You just got to choose how you want to lose. That's all. That's a fun game. That's like getting convicted for felony, and then being summoned by the court or say the king for punishment, and he gives you the choice. We're going to have to amputate you. That is the punishment. Do you want to go with left arm or right arm? Don't you feel thrilled? You got a choice. Woohoo! I get to decide whether it's my left arm or right arm that gets chopped off. Wonderful. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Sansara, where you get the choice of whether it's left arm or right arm you want chopped off. Welcome to Sansara, where you have the choice of being devoured by a pack of hungry hyenas, or giving up your daughter to them to do as they wish with her. Is it not wonderful to have choice? Don't you think that mother who was in the desert was so lucky? She always had choice, didn't she? She could always choose to move on, keep going forward, or stop and dress her child's wound. She always had the choice. Isn't that just wonderful? Don't you think she's so lucky? The choice is yours. Oh, that sweet sound of that, those words, eh? The choice is yours. The sweet, sweet sound of those words, as they ring through your ears, the choice is yours. It makes you feel on top of the world. It makes you feel like your choice matters. But the truth of the matter is, regardless of which choice you go with, you're damned. You're damned if you do, and you're damned if you don't. Go back to the desert. As you take one step forward, you see at some distance, the sign of an oasis. There's a man there. You know this is not an illusion, because he calls out to you. He says, "Hey lady, come over here." Don't be scared. It's just a little bit longer. Just a little bit more to go. A few more steps. I've got everything you need here. Come on, you can do it. I'll feed you. We've got enough food for everyone. There's enough water for everyone. You can shelter here. You can rest here. Come on. Just a little bit more. He waves at you to see if you are really interested to take up on his offer. Do you need a choice? The vultures are waiting for the next bite. The hyenas are waiting to feast. The sun is scorching you from above. The hot ground is burning your feet. And you are busy digesting yourself. Do you need choice right now? Do I wave back or do I not? I'm not sure. Can I trust him? You know, this is not a hallucination. As you take one step further, there are more people there. It seems he's the leader, that man who waved out to you first. And now he's getting his people to come to you. They're all dressed in a strange color, saffron. Not seen anything like that before. Another thing peculiar about them is they're all bald-headed. They've shaven their heads. They're coming your way. The leader who waved at you first, he's still waving at you. A few more steps forward, and you can see him clearly now. He's tall. He seems strong. Very vibrant. A complexion you've never seen before. He's jubilant. He seems extraordinary, like nothing you've seen before. So charismatic. He's got an amazing demeanor about him. You've never seen anyone quite like him. Never in your life you've seen someone like him. And he's still calling out to you. Come on. I'm sending my people to you. They'll help you get to me. Do you want choice? You want choice? Do you want to say, let me think about it and get back to you? Look around. Hyenas. Look her over. Vultures. Your kid fainted. One over your head, dead. The kid that fainted is probably also dead now. It's looking more like you're going to have to make this journey on your own, the rest of this. It seems to be it's every man for himself. And the vultures don't seem to want to give up yet. Now they're on a different agenda. They want to keep you away from those men, those people who seem to want to get to you and take you to the oasis. Now they see threat. It's their meal that appears to be taken away from them. Or at least will be, if they don't act soon enough. The hyenas get taste of this. So now they double up. Now they're ferocious. it seems that everyone that you're dragging are really now lifeless. You're just dragging dead weight, quite literally. I think at least you must feel this way now. For once, you seem to have choice. Up until now, there was really no choice. You were damned if you do, you were damned if you don't. But for once, you now have choice. And what is that choice? The vultures aren't going to give up. The hyenas aren't going to give up. At least not until those people. There seem to be an army. They're walking towards you as fast as they possibly can. But it doesn't look like they run. They only walk. They must be like their leader. Very calm. They don't appear to be exhausted. They appear to be full of vitality and strength and determination. They want to get to you. It's just a matter of, will you survive long enough to get to them? It appears they have extended their arm and appears to take up their offer. You've got to extend your arm and keep moving forward. But what about all this other family that you came along with? They're just dead weight now. So the only time you had any choice really is now. Up until now you couldn't make your mind up. To leave them there and continue your journey. But unfortunately it seems that if you leave them behind, at least you will make it through. They have failed the test. If you remain stubborn now, if you remain deluded by your thoughts, then none of you will have made this journey. So you decide. Against my every desire, I'm going to have to leave this. I'm going to have to leave them behind. So you decide to let go. Once you've decided to do that, now you realize, I now have refuge. Up until now, you thought your refuge was with the people whose hands you held on to. You thought your refuge, your happiness, your salvation was with the people who surrounded you, who were with you. But now you realize there is only one hope. All up until now, you are hopeless, helpless. Everything you did was pointless, meaningless, and essenceless. But now the only way, there appears to be a way to save yourself. Unfortunately, the rest of the family, they didn't live long enough. They didn't survive long enough. Perhaps they just didn't have merits. That man still stood by the oasis. He is waiting for you. And you can just about make out what he's saying now. He says, save yourself. It's everyone for himself. No one can save anyone else. It's everyone for himself. So save yourself, he says. That was the only choice you had. And that is why you decided to go with that choice. So you let go and you moved on. Now with the less burden, you can move faster. Your legs can carry you quicker. But all this time there was no hope. You were hopeless. But now there is hope. Now you're hopeful. All this time there was no help. But now there is help. All this time you were destitute. But now there is refuge. You realize that the only refuge there is now is in that oasis that you see afar. The leader, that man, that extraordinary man who invited you to come, you're at his mercy. It is because of his invitation. It is his voice you heard out loud when you were lost in the desert. It was his hello you heard. It was his beckoning that you heard. So you realize your only refuge is this man. This leader, this extraordinary man, the oasis. His instruction and his team. He's so willingly and so generously sending towards you to pick you up, to take you to the oasis. To give you shelter, to give you food, to resuscitate you, to put you back on two feet, to help you, to support you, to see you through. So you realize they are your only refuge. You now have hope because you know they won't give up on you. You have accepted their offer. You waved back to say, yes, I want your help. Please come and get me. And now they will most certainly come and get you. They come to you just as you are about to fall unconscious. They catch you. They pick you up. And they take you to the oasis. Now, you are free. You have been saved. When life itself looked like it was going to forsake you, the only refuge you had were these three. The man who called out to you, his voice, his instruction, his guidance, his army who came out to you, and their helping hand, their words of encouragement, their guidance, all this because you wanted to get to the oasis, because the oasis is the only place you feel safe. for a million miles from where this oasis is, it's just desert. As you get there, you see others who are like you. It appears that this army who came to get you were once just like you. They share their stories with you. They tell you about this great man. They tell you this is our hero. He saved us. We were just like you, lost in this desert. Just like you, we lost our family to those vultures, to those hyenas, an unforgiving bunch there, relentless, just when we had lost all hope. We were just like you. We were damned if we did and we were damned if we didn't. We were destitute. Just like you, we were helpless. We were hopeless. Everything we did was meaningless. Everything we did was pointless. Just like you. And then we were so lucky. We were so, so lucky to hear this man's voice. This extraordinary man. You ask him, what is his story? And they say, unfortunately, he didn't have us to save him. He was lost once, just like we all were. And then there was none of this. None of us were here back then. He was all alone. He had to run for himself. He had to save himself. He had to escape the vultures himself. He had to leave his son behind. He had to leave his wife behind. He had to leave his family behind. He promised them to come and get back. He promised to get back for them. Or go back for them. And he left them behind. And then he discovered this oasis. None of us was here. None of us were here when he got here. He was the first man to find this place. And then he went back. For his son, for his wife, his family. And when he went back, he found us too. He called us, all of us. We took up his offer. And we followed him. And then we found this oasis. In his footsteps, we walked. His instruction, we followed. His guidance we adhered to, and we got to this oasis. Today we are happy like we've never been. Just like you, we were destitute, we were helpless, we were hopeless. But we were just so lucky to hear this man's voice. He's our leader. He's our master. We call him the perfect one. He discovered this place without any help. He's not like us. We have equals. You and I, we both found this place with help, but he found it without help. So we call him the unequaled one. You and I, we journeyed this treacherous desert, listening to instruction. Therefore, you and I, we are similar. But no, he wasn't like that. That's why we call him the unparalleled one. There were others that lost before they could get here. They became prey to the vultures and the hyenas. But he didn't. Therefore, we call him the undefeated one. Others tried to destroy him. The hyenas tried it. The vultures tried it. The great beasts tried to destroy him. But they couldn't even touch him. He escaped all that. So we call him the unvanquished one. And believe you me, ever since he got here, all he's ever wanted to do was to give everyone the chance that he got. His mercy knows no bounds. So we call him the merciful one. His compassion knows no limits. Ever since we got here, he's given us food, he's given us water, and limitless access to the oasis. We can go anywhere we like, we can do whatever we like. He has taught us to live in harmony with each other. He has taught us that everyone in this desert needs help, just like you and I have. And he said, whenever you have the chance to help, don't take a second thought. Don't think twice. Don't even blink twice. Go help them. His compassion knows no limits, therefore we call him the infinitely compassionate one. There's none other like him. So we call him the unique one. He found this place by himself. So we call him the supreme one. He knows this place inside out because he's been here longest. He knows everything about everything in this place. So we call him the omniscient one. His presence is just so invigorating. We can only feel joy when we speak with him. His words are so encouraging. They are always words that encourage us to go help others and look out for ourselves. So we call him the Magnificent One. He was our only refuge. So we take refuge in him. We sought refuge in him. His instruction was what helped us. So we sought refuge in his instruction. And he sent his army to save us. Just like today we have come to save you. So in that army, we took refuge. It is because we took refuge. Today we are in the oasis. Free from harm, free from danger, free from threat. Just happy. It is taking refuge in these three that has given us true happiness. We feel that they are gems where we found the three gems that saved our life. Nothing like this we ever found before. So we call it the Noble Triple Gem. And in the Noble Triple Gem we take refuge. The only refuge we had when we were destitute, helpless, hopeless, pointless, meaningless, essenceless. Now you think this is just a story? Just a film? Or is this a story about ourselves? Isn't this our story? What about that mother with the beautiful daughter? She's damned if she does, she's damned if she doesn't. What help does she have? There's a fire burning on the inside. Her heart is on fire. What solace does she have? The woman in the workplace, what solace does she have? The wife who waits for her dear husband to get home, what solace does she have? You can't change the world around you. You can try, but you'll never find peace that way. Because you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. No matter what part you try to change, some other part is going to go corrupt. It is the way it is. To be happy, we have to learn to accept it. We have to learn to find peace within. And to find peace within, we seek refuge in the Noble Triple Gem, the Buddha, the Dhamma, and the Sangha. Buddha is Nibbana. Dhamma is the path to Nibbana. Sangha is exactly what you have to do on the path to Nibbana. So really all three of them is Nibbana. That is why Nibbana is the only refuge. Devas, Brahmas, humans, everyone. Nibbana is the only salvation. Nibbana is the only bliss. So may you attain. May you all attain. That supreme bliss, that supreme salvation of Nibbana. May the refuge of the Noble Triple Gem always be with you. That is what you need to wish upon others, your friends and your so-called enemies. Look around you and you'll see how many other destitute people there are. Each and every one of them. They're all fighting for their life, fighting for their loved ones. You may find that the last bit of food that you had in your backpack, you look one way, you look the other way, and then you look behind you and it's gone. There's only one reason for that. That's because someone else needed it more than you do. That's why. How do you know? You didn't need it so bad. That's why you didn't steal it. But someone needed it worse than you. So they stole it. Now how do you hate someone who steals? What is the only way you can really allow yourself to feel about someone who's stolen something that belonged to you? Is it compassion or hatred? Understand, they only took it because they needed it more than you do. Yes or no? Do you agree with me? You didn't steal it, did you? No, Why not? You needed it, but you didn't need it that bad. Someone stole it off you. Why was that? Because they needed it. They needed it so bad. They needed it so bad that they were willing to go to the hell. If that is what is needed, that is what it takes to get what they need, they were still prepared to do it. So who needed it worse? You or them? So, can you hate them now? Can you despise them? Is anger a valid emotion towards them? When you're among friends and someone needs a drink of water and you have a bottle in your hand, who do you offer it to first? Someone's panting, someone's exhausted. The others seem to be okay. But this one guy, about to faint, who do you offer that drink first? Of course. That's because they need it more than everyone else does, right? And you're okay with that, right? Well then, someone's taken something that belongs to you. Because they needed it more than you do. I'm not suggesting you shouldn't try and get it back. That is not for me to decide. Those are worldly affairs that I don't meddle in. If someone took something that belonged to me, I'd let them have it. Because they need it more than I do. Unfortunately, I don't have much that someone would want to steal from me. The only thing that belongs to me are my three robes and my alms bowl. This is just a bit of cloth. And that's just a bit of tin. So if anyone wanted to take it, let them have it. So I'm not suggesting that you can do the same. I understand circumstances are different. But what I'm saying is, how are you supposed to feel about them? What emotions do you think you should permit yourself to have towards them? Anger? Hate? Retaliation? Tit for tat? They needed it more than you do. Just like that man needed a drink of water more than you needed. So what did you do? You offered him the bottle first. You were quite happy with that. So now think along the same lines. Whether you get it back or not, I'm trying to help you understand how you should approach these situations mentally. That's what I'm saying. Everyone's destitute, folks. Please try and understand that. Everyone is destitute until they hear that man's voice. Until they hear his instruction. Until they receive a lending hand from his army. Until they get a glimpse of the oasis. The destitute. And they live in intense terror and fear. Vultures on the one side, hyenas on the other side, burning sun from above, the burning ground from below. The burning acid from inside. Inside, outside, everywhere. It's just trouble after trouble. Anto jata bahi jata. They need help. They're destitute. And the only refuge is the Noble Triple Gem. So once you understand that, you join the army. Once you join the army, then all you want is to help others come to the oasis. Isn't that right? Once you've seen the oasis, what are you not willing to let go? Remember, it's every man for himself. You can't drag your kids along with you. They've got to walk for themselves. When the army conmen extend their arms, it's only those who willingly extend their own arms and hold their hand are allowed can actually walk into the oasis. You can't do it by force. You can't walk another one's path. And you can't walk for someone else on their path either. You got to walk your path. They've got to walk their path. All you can do is help them. When the army come and extend their arms, it's each man for themselves. Reach out and grab, and those who do willingly will be able to enter the oasis. Those who don't, well, they'll just have to wait for the day they're willing to. That's the way it works. But what I want you to understand is how everyone is destitute. Every mother with a beautiful daughter is destitute. Every husband with a beautiful wife is destitute. As I said before, there is nothing in this world that you like, that you can say there is no one else in this world who also likes. Nothing. Anything that you like, there's someone else that also likes. So the moment you acquire that, now you have to guard that. So destitute. Then it just comes to a case of how badly do you want it? How badly do you want what you have? And you know how some people say, I love my family so much, if anyone was to come and hurt them, it's over my dead body. In other words, what they're saying is, to protect my family, I'll kill if I must. See? What happens if you kill? You're damned. What happens if you don't kill? You're damned. So you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. The only way out of this, ask the Buddha what he has to say. Ask the Buddha what he had to say. Ask the Sangha what the Buddha has to say. Everyone's in this mess. Every son who's got a good-looking mother, damned. He fears introducing her to his friends. Are you saying I'm talking nonsense? You sure? You know why you don't like to hear me say this? Because you know it's true. If I told you the moon was red, it wouldn't hurt you so much. Because you know it's not true. If I told you the sky was green, it wouldn't hurt you so much. Because you know it's not true. But when I say this, it hurts people. Because they just don't even want to think about it. But that's the truth. So how do you escape? How do you escape this conundrum, this dilemma of you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't? How do you escape it? There's only one way. Ask the Buddha. If you can't find him, ask the Sangha. Make way for the oasis. Get there as soon as you can. That's the only place you are free from all this. So may the Noble Triple Gem forever guide you to the ultimate bliss, the ultimate freedom, the ultimate liberation, the ultimate fulfillment, the ultimate happiness, the ultimate satisfaction. Of the oasis of Nibbana. In the hope that all these merits that we have acquired help us on that path throughout the day, throughout the year, throughout our life, throughout samsara. Let us take a moment to transfer the merits to ourselves and to all others. May we and all sentient beings be able to find refuge, seek refuge, and get that refuge. To get to the oasis of Nibbana as soon as possible. Let us take a moment then to transfer the merits that we have all acquired by making offerings to the infinite virtues of the Noble Triple Gem, chanting Pirit, listening to the Dhamma, and engaging in various meritorious deeds today. First and foremost, let us remind ourselves how incredibly fortunate we are to be in receipt of the Lord Buddha's teaching. With immense gratitude, let us transfer these merits to the bhikkhus and bhikkhunis, upasakas and upasikas, who since time immemorial have protected and preserved the sublime teachings of the Buddha and passed it down through the generations of the noble lineage in the form of the Tripitaka, which is thankfully available to us today to study, understand and comprehend the Dhamma. Let us also transfer the merits we have acquired to all members of the Mahasangha present throughout the world, including the chief prelates of all the chapters, who have dedicated their lives to the noble path and have committed themselves towards the betterment of all sentient beings. Let us not forget that among them are the monks and nuns, resident in your local temples and nunneries, who have always been by your side through thick and thin, come rain or shine. Let us also transfer these merits to Guru Swami Nuhanse and all monks resident at this monastery, as well as Yanagarikas and Anagarikas attached to the monastery. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits and express our gratitude to those who make great efforts to disseminate the teachings of the Buddha, be that by transliterating these sermons, sharing them out with others, or inviting others to join them. May through the power of these merits, if any of them have been born in the woeful plane, redeem themselves and be born in the blissful plane. May to the power of these merits they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also transfer the merits we have acquired to our devotees and friends of the monastery, who for the sake of merits continue to sustain the Mahasangha. This includes everyone from those of you who have contributed to the construction of the monastery to those of you who provide the Mahasangha with shelter, arms, robes and medicines, as well as those who have passed on their know-how and continue to extend their well wishes. May through the power of these merits they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us take a moment to transfer merits to our fathers and mothers, husbands and wives, brothers and sisters, sons and daughters, grandparents, uncles, aunts, cousins, nephews and nieces, our elders, friends and acquaintances, employers and employees, and to all those who have helped us, supported us, assisted us in any way, shape or form. By the power of these merits, may they be healed of any physical and mental ailments and overcome any obstacles to their spiritual progress. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer merits to the devas and brahmas, spirits and demons, primarily the Sakadeva, as well as all the numerous gods and deities who are committed to protect and fulfill the Sambuddha Shasane. Let us also transfer merits to our guardian deities who keep a watchful eye over us and keep us out of harm's way. And may through the power of these merits they prosper in divine power and wisdom. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer merits to our ancestors who have predeceased us, to all who have been our families, friends and acquaintances in this infinitely long journey in samsara, and who have helped and supported us, assisted us in any way, shape or form they could. Let us transfer these merits to them. Let us also transfer merits to the members of the armed forces as well as the police force who have sacrificed their lives on numerous occasions to protect the peace and harmony of our nation and continue to do so. May all who have lost their lives in the war, be their friend or foe, rejoice in the merits we have acquired today. Let us also transfer merits to all those who have lost their lives in the natural calamities such as the tsunamis and earthquakes, landslides and pandemics, including the most recent and prevailing one, reminding ourselves that among them will be those who have been friends and family to us in this long journey in samsara. Let us take a moment to transfer merits to them. May to the power of these merits, if any of them have been in woeful planes, redeem themselves and be born in the blissful plane. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And finally, let us all resolve that may through the power of the blessings of all the merits we have acquired throughout the day, we be able to witness the advent of many hundreds of thousands of arahat and mahanses on this blessed land. And finally, may to the power of all the merits we have acquired today, you and I, and everyone who has helped make this program a success, become an arahat and mahanse or an arahat mehin and mahanse in this very life, and reach the oasis of Nibbana in this very life, and in the era of the Gautama Supreme Buddha itself. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. We will now conclude the sermon. May the blessings of the Noble Triple Gem be with you all.